A multi-billion dollar federal investment into childcare in New York has the potential to shore up the existing provider infrastructure in the state and expand access to care, but it will fall short of ensuring all New York families can access high-quality care, which is the goal of Senate Children and Families Committee Chair Jabari Brisport, who joins us now to talk about crafting a plan to achieve universal childcare in New York and his upcoming listening tour. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be back.
Yeah, it's great to see you in person, too.
Yeah.
I think for the first time since you took office. This
yeah.
is wild. So based on the current landscape in New York, it seems like the families who can obtain good childcare are either rich enough to pay for it out of pocket or poor enough to access a limited pool of government subsidized care. Is that how you view the situation in New York? And if so, how many families are potentially left scrambling in that middle area?
There is a huge dearth of availability for childcare throughout the state, Dave. And in some regions, I've seen statistics saying that there is only one spot for as many as four or six kids that need a spot getting mm-hmm. childcare. And that's for the reasons you mentioned, but it's also there are part of states that are childcare deserts, where no one can even find a provider that's accessible to them. And that's the point of what we're doing throughout the fall, is working to find legislation and a system that's going to work for everyone.
So as you think about achieving universal care, is it primarily about creating that infrastructure so that there are providers, or is it about addressing the cost of care?
It's all of the above. So for cost, one thing that's already emerging as we're listening for what people need around the state is for parents is that it's unaffordable. I haven't met a single parent yet that said that they have found affordable childcare. The costs are astronomical in many parts of the state, and it needs to be affordable for them, free at the point of service. And aside from that, it is about building up infrastructure as well. There are nonprofits that could be scaled up, but there will probably also need to be some form of public infrastructure as well to shore it up. We have a great model with our schools, right? We have not guaranteed universal education to everyone through a series of nonprofits. We have understood that public institutions were necessary to do that.
Well, do you then have a preference to see how to build out that provider network in New York? Do we go the school route and have just state-run or locally government-run facilities, or do you still believe that private providers have a role to play in whatever sort of universal system could emerge?
I think nonprofits will continue to have a role in this, and they are more than welcome. They're almost the backbone of the tour. We are touring and physically visiting mm-hmm. providers throughout the state, and including ones who have closed because they have lost funding throughout the pandemic, and hearing what they need and how they want to be involved with it. And many of them, willingly, if they had the funding, would be able to pay their workers more and also hire more workers to guarantee more care.
And when we talk about universal access, what does that mean exactly? Does that mean you have no out-of-pocket expenses? Is it some sort of sliding scale of expenses? What do you envision?
It should be free at the point of service for
okay.
parents.
No matter whether you're a millionaire or whether you've, barely scraping by.
Yep, just like we do with anybody can attend a public school. It's not means tested. The library is not means tested. You can go to a public park. It's not means tested.
And why do you think that's important?
I found that when we start to do means testing and saying, okay, you get this amount if you make this or this amount, that leads to a lot of administrative burden. And it often leads to a lot of people at the lower end of the spectrum that are left behind or missed a little bit. But when we say it's universal, one, we have buy-in from everyone, mm-hmm. and everyone wants to work towards it. And it's honestly just easier to administer because everyone has access to it.
So then what could be the potential cost of administering a program like that?
That's still to be determined once we are finished up the listening tour and seeing what everyone needs and expects in this. We also need to ensure that providers are paid adequately. Mm-hmm. And, the only one thing I want to add to is that in addition to thinking about the cost, we have to also ask if we can afford not to do this. Studies have shown that the actual return on investment of investing in childcare, we get more out of it than we do than we put in. So it's an economic driver, and it's also the social infrastructure of the 21st century we need to be guaranteeing.
Based on the scope, though, it's probably reasonable to assume this would be billions more each year. And with a price tag like that, is it reasonable to think that we could only do something like that if we saw a continued investment from Washington, D.C., or is this something that New York could fund potentially on its own?
Well, I always will appreciate more money from Washington, D.C., Dave. But New York is one of the wealthiest states in the country, and a lot of people forget, but billionaires made over $100 billion in the course of the pandemic in the state alone. There is a vast amount of wealth that we can redistribute by taxing the rich and putting it towards social services like a universal child care program.
We talked a little bit about the infrastructure lacking right now and needing to build it up. What sort of timeline makes sense for achieving the infrastructure that could serve every New York child who might want to be part of this system? Because is this something that would take years potentially?
We have found that we can totally restructure the economy and society in the matter of weeks during COVID, because we decided that it was an emergency and that if we need to restructure society in an emergency, we can do so. So in terms of timeline, it depends on how much pressure and how much our society determines this is an emergency. And it is, because people cannot get back to work if they cannot have childcare. And it's for many families, it is an emergency for them.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking with Senate Children and Families Committee Chair Jabari Brisport, who's hoping to make childcare universally accessible in New York. Do you think, in addition to changing the way we think about childcare in terms of, you know, the providers, do we need to have a conversation as our society about just childcare in general? Because it seems like in the traditional two-parent male-female family, a lot of the burden gets shifted off to the
yes.
mom traditionally. Mm-hmm. So do we as a society need to revisit that conversation and make sure that parents are both like co-equally doing this, and in some situations having the father do even more if that's what it calls for?
There absolutely needs to be more gender parity in the discussion, and, you know, less of putting in invisible unpaid labor onto women in our society. And I think this avenue that we're going through is, you know, through a government-funded program to guarantee universal access that will lift a lot of the burden that's been tossed on women for thousands of years.
So now that you've announced the goal and you've got these listening tours mm-hmm. planned, what will the listening tours look like? Where are you hoping to go? And who are you hoping to hear from?
We are doing 9 locations throughout the state, based on various regions, a few in New York City and a bunch upstate and in Long Island. And we're doing that throughout the fall. And it's going to be a hybrid listening tour where we visit physical providers mm-hmm. during the day and also do a roundtable discussion. And then in the evenings, we'll have virtual listening sessions so we can hear from not just childcare providers, but also home-based care providers and parents and also local administrators. So we hope to get the voices of people who need childcare, but also provide childcare and those who administrate in it.
And then how soon after completing that do you think you could put some sort of legislative package together? And do you view this as being something that would get done as a standalone bill, or because of the way Albany works and because of the likely price tag involved with this, would you want to see this done in the context of the budget?
We anticipate looking to have legislation ready for next year and getting it done through the budget.
And why would the budget be the right way for this? Is it because this could eventually involve so much money?
It's the price tag, and also looking in my experience with raising revenue in the past year, what worked best for bigger items like this was that if we did not ascribe one particular revenue stream towards it, as such was the case with, you know, fully funding the foundation aid in education.
You sponsored a bill that extends the life of the Child Care Availability Task Force. I think we're still waiting for Governor Hochul now to sign that bill. What role do you see this task force playing as you continue to craft this bill? Because I noticed at your press conference today, there were some members of
yeah.
the task force who were standing there beside you. So it seems like you plan on listening to them.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Schuyler Center has been mm-hmm. integral to this. Also, Jen O'Connor from Prevent Child Abuse New York. I anticipate the governor will be very excited about pursuing some model for universal child care. So many of the people that worked on the task force are welcome and are invited and attending the listening tour. And, you know, this is going to be a group effort to make this happen.
You just said that you think the governor would be very excited about expanding to universal childcare. Is that something you would have said about the previous governor?
Absolutely not.
And what do you see as the difference? Because obviously there are rhetorical differences. Kathy Hochul has been out and about on this issue. She's part of the childcare availability task force. But besides that rhetoric that she might have said, what makes you feel like she is going to really put her weight behind this?
I think our previous governor was blatantly a governor of the 1% of special interests and not for the people and not for the working class. And we have a new governor here who has an amazing opportunity to turn a new page on Albany and say that she's going to stand with working people. And as someone who I know is very interested in childcare, I'm excited for her to have help move Albany a completely different direction than the previous governor and make childcare a priority.
Right now, under her watch, we're seeing the rollout of these stabilization grants that are designed to shore up providers. It's a lot of money. I think it's $1.1 billion. We recently talked with OCFS Commissioner Sheila Poole about the rollout, which she is very happy with, providers have been very happy with. What are your thoughts on the latest effort by the state to distribute a lot of childcare money, especially in the wake of how last year's distribution of CARES Act money was flawed, to say the least?
I will say it's going better than the first initial rounds of the first national bucket of money. But even beyond the money, what we have to concern ourselves with is there are childcare providers that have shut down. Mm-hmm. You know, they've already money and they're not sure if they'll get back on their feet. So I would say that this is the stepping stone to saying that we need some sort of, you know, government-funded program that we know we can rely on and ensures equitable access to people across the state. And also that, you know, these programs would have had a better chance to survive if they had been better funded to begin with. And that's something that's been lacking.
Do you feel confident in Sheila Poole's ability to run the Office of Children and Family Services, the agency that's responsible for overseeing all the existing child care programs, and potentially, if your bill becomes law, likely the implementation of universal child care? I mean, it was on her watch that we had, you know, some problematic Cuomo policies, but we've also seen, you know, the agency heralded this summer for its rollout of programs. So what are your feelings about her and, you know, Hochul potentially keeping her on?
You know what, Sheila is invited to listening tour as well, and I think that as long as we're all talking together and working together and, you know, understand where everyone is coming from and that we're all have the same goals in mind, then we can do this. Like, this is, you know, not about any one particular person, but it's going to be a group effort to, one, push this forward, but also maintain it.
In the legislature, we often have lawmakers playing musical chairs with committees whenever a vacancy pops up. But your counterpart in the Assembly, Andrew Hevesy, has indicated to us that he's happy with the Children and Families Committee in the People's House. So what do you see as your future with the Senate Children and Families Committee, especially in light of how your predecessor, Velmanette Montgomery, was the top Democrat on the committee for years?
I was really honored to be chosen as the chair of this. We did not do much musical chairs at all in the Senate. I think everyone that had a committee stayed on their committee, and new people were our own little baby musical chairs or shuffled around. So as a former teacher, I taught middle school. I was thrilled to be working on something dealing with children and the future. And honestly, like, dealing with childcare and also the foster care system in this committee is, I think, so critical to dealing with a lot of the issues that my district faces and that New York faces. You know, we're in a wave of gun violence is rising up across the state. You know, the previous governor declared it a state of emergency, and a lot of that is just, you know, can be traced back to trauma. You know, in addition to the lack of social services, but, you know, what trauma were some of these, you know, young men that are firing guns now facing as a kid? And if we can intercept that or address that before it happens, that's what's great about this committee, is making sure that there's the full supports for children from the very, very beginning of their lives.
And finally, we're in the start of a new school year right now. Do you miss teaching at all right now?
You know what's amazing, as I still run into my students throughout the district. I was just at a march for the West Indian Day parade in Brooklyn, and I ran into a couple of my students laughing because I was hot in my jacket and tie and fanning myself. And I absolutely miss them. And what's great is that when I was a teacher, I would always shake my fist at not having enough funding for schools. But now I'm a legislator, and I can ensure that there's enough funding for my schools and my students.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator Jabari Brisport. He's the chair of the Committee on Children and Families. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Pleasure.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.